Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It. It's Thursday, and if you're a regular listener, you know that means it's time for us to check in with our Gothamist colleagues about what stories they've seen and they've been digging into this week. Here to help break down the most pressing cultural issues of the week are Jen Carlson, Gothamist Editorial Director. Hi, Jen.
Hello.
Paula Mejia. I've been practicing that, Paula.
Hello.
Their digital producer, and Ben Yakis, Culture Editor. Ben, you all have to wait for Christopher Robin because this Amazon story, just as we were going on the air, we noticed there was a lot of activity in the newsroom.
People screaming and freaking out.
Definitely. Amazon not coming to Queens after all. For real? For sure?
For real. They put out a statement on Valentine's Day, of all days.
We do not love New York.
Their statement was it thanked the governor and the mayor for being supportive, but also pointed to the opposition from some politicians in Queens and some grassroots activists, if they can't support us, we can't come to New York, even though they already have thousands of people already working here. And they said they would continue to expand their workforce in the city. It's just they're not going to build HQ2 in Long Island City anymore.
So what will be some of the ripple effect in terms of jobs, transportation? Has anything been put in motion, or was this all just talk at this point?
They had until March 11th to come up with a finalized plan. But, you know, the governor's office, which was really supportive of Amazon, they will say that New York City just lost out on, 25,000 to 40,000 high-paying jobs and billions of dollars in tax revenue to repair infrastructure and to help the state. You know, activists and state senators from Queens will say, look, Amazon mistreats its employees. They never really wanted to work with us in the first place. So it's really kind of stunning that, one of the biggest companies in the world pulled out at this stage when there hadn't even really been a negotiation. There'd been some city council hearings that were noisy. There'd been a lot of rallies. There'd been a lot of canvassing, some back and forth. But, the ball was still very much in Amazon's court, and they sort of chose to take it home,
This completely, that doesn't make sense. There's something else to the story.
Well,
there has to be.
Yeah. So, the retail workers union was opposed, obviously, because Amazon is an anti-union company. But, the building trades unions were in favor of it because they want to build things. It would have created jobs for them. So there's the union component. There's also the political component. There's a lot of progressive Democrats in the state legislature now that weren't there a year ago who are really hearing from their constituents that, look, like, we don't want this company in our neighborhood, in our borough, if they're not going to sort of play by New York City's rules. And that was the city council's logic in opposing Amazon's presence here. And I think what's really surprising is it didn't even get to the stage of any sort of back and forth or negotiation. It was, Amazon, the governor, the mayor sort of announced this was happening. There was some pushback, and then poof, Amazon's gone.
That's what I mean. What makes one of the largest companies in the world back down?
Well, remember, this was a contest, right? It was a nationwide contest to find Amazon's second headquarters. And all these cities across the country submitted so much data about everything about their cities, like education, infrastructure, all these things. New York did the same thing. And so, a cynic might say, what was this all about, really? Was this about building a second headquarters for Amazon? Was this about Amazon collecting a bunch of
tax
privileged
breaks?
Information? Well,
oh, collecting information. Oh, interesting.
Right. But, Amazon stood to get around $3 billion, as much as $3 billion tax breaks from New York, tax breaks and grants, which is true. But, a lot of those tax breaks they could have gotten anyway. And if they had stuck this out and, they still probably would have gotten them. So it's hard to, everyone is still reeling, trying to figure out what is actually going on.
It's a head scratcher.
Very
and
much
a
so.
Chin scratcher, yes. As well. It's a double whammy. Okay, I'm going to let you go.
I'm getting out of here.
Go work that story. Thanks, Christopher.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jen, your headline is so funny. We tried to clean this filthy subway platform.
Yes, we did.
So that is a piece you did. And that is something that Gothamist actually tried to do. Tell us about the genesis of this story and this plan.
Well, for the past year or so, I've been thinking about, I want to do this series, Cleaning NYC, where we just go around and document how things are cleaned, or if no one's cleaning them, clean them ourselves. And Cuomo had released this, Photoshop image the other week that was literally like an image of my idea to like clean the subway. It's like, so I was like, we have to do this. Now it's out there. So
what did the image look like? Just for people?
It was just like this guy on his hands and knees on the subway platform with like Tide, because Cuomo is basically making fun of the MTA for, he claims that they use Tide detergent to clean the platforms.
This was hilarious to Cuomo for some reason. Mm-hmm. But we're also talking about a man who, you know, said he was going to change his name to Amazon Cuomo. So his sense of humor
is
really suspect.
He could use some governor, scriptwriter, jokester. It's called John Lovett to punch that up there.
Yeah.
Continue. I'm sorry, Jen.
Yeah. So we went over and just were like, you know, I've been kind of wanting to clean the subway station for a while. It's in Brooklyn. It's like very, very dirty. And I kind of wanted to see like what it would really take if you could even get through the surface.
How many layers of grime?
So we went over with Jeff Seal, and he tested out some different products. What really worked was the Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. I don't know what that thing is made of, but it is really amazing. People were walking by like, is that the magic eraser? I use that at home.
Multi-purpose.
Well, the name magic is in the title, so that's what it does. It does magic.
So it really gave us a satisfying image of like what is under there in comparison to what it looks like.
What did you find under all the grime?
I think we found a floor and the original way that floor should look.
My goodness. So you got to see the yellow line. Mm-hmm. Is there, I don't mean to be a cynic, now I'm all cynical because of Amazon. Is there any sort of tie-in with Tide? Are they like a Procter & Gamble product? Or is there something that follow the money back to Albany?
I think we have to go back and test out the Tide. But I don't know why. I don't know if, I didn't get the MTA. They didn't confirm with me like if they actually do use Tide. But that's what Cuomo said they used.
All right. And what subway stop was this? So if people want to go see if your little spot of clean is still there.
This is the High Street stop in Brooklyn.
Okay. Jen, thanks so much. Paula, your piece, Everyone Says Gennaro Lombardi Brought Pizza to New York. What this blog presupposes is maybe he didn't. How did you find the story?
So I started seeing this tweet make the rounds about this unusual story that challenges the myth of the Lombardi family, especially Gennaro Lombardi. So I looked into it, and it turns out that this independent researcher named Peter Regas has been researching pizza lore for a decade and found out that the story that we know is probably not true.
It's apocryphal? Tell me, you even have great graphics in the story?
We got newspaper advertisements. We got everything.
Now, from this show, I have learned people have intense feelings about pizza.
Passionate
intense.
Pizza.
So they shouldn't write you necessarily.
No, definitely not.
So what did you learn about New York and pizza writing this story?
A lot. So the story that has been told for a long time is that Gennaro Lombardi immigrated to New York as a young man, and he established Lombardi's, and it was the first licensed pizzeria in New York City. And what Peter Regas found is that while Gennaro Lombardi did own Lombardi's for a time, he wasn't the sole owner. And he found this out through looking up business directories. And through that, he started realizing that there's probably an entire generation of older pizza makers who also immigrated from Italy and who had probably worked at pizzerias there, who came to New York and were owning and operating different places. And I think that something that I thought was interesting was he and Scott Wiener, who is a pizza historian and who leads Scott's Pizza Tours here in the city, both mentioned that back then, pizza was really something that people didn't really know what to do with. And so it was referred to as an Italian pie. Sometimes these people were referred to as bakers. And so looking them up in directories can be a little unusual, too, because they're not listed under pizzerias a lot of the time.
That's so interesting. So in terms of people having done research, they may not have had the correct terminology to actually ascertain the facts.
I think that's definitely possible. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So this has made me crave pizza a lot. And in talking with you right now, I realized I've had pizza three times this week. So
wow, from the same place?
No. Getting my fix from different places.
All right. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you. That was a dangerous assignment, writing about pizza in New York City.
I'm willing to do it for journalism.
You're a brave woman.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I want to go for pizza now.
You can't. You have to go study up on Amazon. You guys are locked in the newsroom for the next 24 hours.
We could order a pizza.
Yeah.
All right.
We used to have pizza Fridays, you know.
Really?
Yeah, we used to have a pizza delivered every Friday.
What happened?
You know, that's a question that I would pose to people who are not here in the room right now.
All right. I can see something's going to happen in the news meeting this week. All right, Ben, we're talking to the folks from the Gothamist, by the way. Your piece, The Absolute Worst, Most Heinous Garbage Dogs of Westminster Dog Show 2019.
Really bad dogs.
Bad dogs. You visited the dog show, and what happened?
So this was, you know, the 2019 Westminster Dog Show. I think we talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago about the previewing for it, but it took place this weekend. Saturday was the Meet the Breeds, and then Monday and Tuesday was the actual competition. And at the actual competition, you can buy tickets to go backstage and see some of the dogs before they have to go out there and perform. And it's a really fun event, and you can kind of say hi to some of the dogs. Some of the groomers and trainers let you pet them. I went, and it just is a real shame that all I could find were the worst dogs in the world there.
Would you like to identify the worst dogs in the world?
Well, I you know, in case it's not obvious to anybody, I am a dog person. I love dogs. They're like the best thing in the world. So,
well, it's very funny on this site. You click on a picture, and you're like, this dog makes the MTA late.
Yeah.
This dog.
I mean, like, you know, like this dog tells people in the comments to go back to Ohio, even though it's 2019. And I think you can come up with something a little more original, pal. It's things along that line. It's basically just roasting dogs, which I think we should constantly be doing. But yeah, I mean, literally every single dog there is amazing and wonderful and a perfect specimen and an angel and deserves every treat in the world.
This is what you wrote. I'm going to read this. I had something of a personal revelation. I did not care one bit about watching the competition. How dare humans have the gall to pit one sweet, loving angel against another, spending quality time backstage with the pups as they got ready? You walk away with a deep appreciation for every single adorable inbred animal in the house. There are no winners as far as I'm concerned, because every dog I had the privilege of petting won a gold medal in my heart.
Aww.
Yeah, and please put that on my tombstone. Yeah, that whole thing.
If you should go before any of us, make sure that happens.
Thank you.
Now everybody knows. Everybody knows. So who actually did win?
The actual winner, the best in show, mm-hmm. was King, who is a 9-year-old wire fox terrier with a very judgmental looking face. but, you know, he's the king. There were a lot of stars, though. One of the funny things this year is there were a lot of random dogs who kind of emerged out of the miasma of all these animals, including Winky, which was a Bichon Frise who took his time.
Yes.
I think he took about 5 times as much as any other dog in his agility competition.
Winky likes the spotlight.
Yes. Winky was really soaking it up.
He
had this moment at the top of a triangle, this exercise thing, and he just stopped and just sort of surveyed over his crowd, his people. Thank you all for coming today. And he kept going, but it was just so gingerly in his movements.
I have a funny dog show story. So I'm a newish dog owner. We have a Norfolk Terrier.
Ooh.
Who are adorable, who I think were described as little demons by the the announcers. And in the dog show, the dog's name is Isaac, and that's the name of my son.
Whoa.
So we have the terrier at home and the son at home named Isaac. So it was just a beautiful dog moment.
Wait, what's your dog's name?
Rocco.
Rocco. What was he named after? Where did he come from?
I don't know. The kid just named him. So what do you want to call a dog?
That's dangerous. You know, like, you never know what the kid's going to come up with.
Yeah. It was Rocco Shazam.
Rocco Shazam. That's actually a great name.
Yeah,
it's a good name.
It's pretty jazzy.
I think we do have some audio, though. One of the best things is listening to the announcers.
Yes.
Let's listen to the announcers. They're calling some of the agility.
Gabby has to be 43.20.
No, that's fine. It's just time. It's just time. Wow. We're taking the long way around everything, it looks like. But this is a young, young dog.
Through the weave post.
It is like Best in Show is for real.
It's not a joke in that Best in Show is like a minor sort of like parody of this. It's really close to reality, much more than you would imagine.
So I have to apologize. We were going to have you guys on last week, as we always do.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit of an issue with one of our guests. And
yeah.
It's stuck in your craw, Ben.
Well, you know, we were all really excited. We were like sort of gearing up. We're like, what a great lineup she has on this week. Leslie Headland is like brilliant. And Hollywood Jake Gyllenhaal. This guy was 20 minutes late. He strolls in. Oh, the MTA. Oh, the trains aren't working.
Do we have the clip, actually, of when it happened? Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very well. New York Public Transportation Systems.
Oh. Yeah. Jake just got here. Hi, Jake.
Hi.
I was going to ask you about that Instagram account, Jake Gyllenhaal on the subway.
Oh, is there?
There
unfortunately,
is.
Unfortunately, I was using my feet today. Oh, I don't need this. I used my feet today after I had a difficult time finding my way here on time. So,
you know what? We'll take a quick break. You can take your coat off.
Great.
Relax. Stay a while.
All right.
Stay with this here. You weren't buying it.
Yeah. Right when you said stay a while is, I think, when my heart broke. Yeah. So Hollywood Jake Gyllenhaal changing his story up. He's blaming it on the trains at first. And he's saying, I was walking over. And I saw him stroll in. He was not running down the hallway to get here. He was very leisurely and gingerly strolling over. So, you know, Jake, I don't know. I
live
feel
radio,
like
people.
It is live radio, but, you know, we got bumped. This was like a real thing.
Well, I will try. I don't want that to happen again.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all.
If Jake's on the lineup, we'll pad next time if he comes back for his next project.
Yeah, maybe he could, you know, a personal apology perhaps. It's no biggie.
Jake, ball's in your court. Ben, Jen, and Paula. From Gothamist. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All of it will be back after a break with the first of two conversations about the photographer Robert Mapplethorpe. First up, a new exhibition at the Guggenheim. We'll talk to its curators. We'll be back after a quick break.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.